Welcome to episode 45 of the Band of Gamers podcast. My name is Greylock 3491, and this week I'm joined by Osiris Prime.
Yay, I'm back.
Hello, everybody.
And Zeus Adamus. And Zeus Adamus.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Sorry, I had a hotkey problem there.
I just thought that was funny to say it twice. Guys, it's great. We've had a two-week hiatus, and I don't know. I didn't go anywhere except to work. But wouldn't it be nice if we were actually like in some like far away mythical place, you know? But I don't think you guys were either. You know, why don't we go ahead and get started? I'm just going to, you know, kick it off with what I've been playing last couple weeks, and it hasn't been too much. Mostly been playing Castle Siege, which is a enjoyable but also frustrating game, because for 2 or 3 minutes a day, it's a lot of fun. And then after 2 or 3 minutes, you really can't do anything. You got to come back. I went to upgrade my castle. I think I went from age 4 to 5, and it was like, oh, all right, this is going to take 2 days. See you then. It's like, what? But I have occasionally been getting some gold and revving up my troops faster so I can go attack people. And I guess that's really the only thing I've been doing is attacking other players, which doesn't really destroy their village. It's like attacking a copy of their village. And the only thing they really lose is crowns. And Prime, you can, if I make any mistakes here, Please call me out on it. But it's a fun game, but a lot of the things you do, if you're not willing to spend $20, $30, $40 buying gold, it's really pick it up, play it for 3 or 4 minutes, and then come back in a couple hours. So it's a fun game, a little frustrating. I've played it on the PC on my Windows 10 laptop, my netbook, and it runs pretty good. Played it on my iPad, too. It runs pretty good. I recently inherited a Surface... version 1 Surface Windows RT tablet, and it's a little slow on that. I was surprised. It bogs down a little bit on that. But fun game. It's free, and we have our very own Allegiance, and Prime, is it called CAG? I forget what it's even called. I feel bad. I should know this. But we recently... came in the top 3 for our league.
I think it was CAG.
And we came in top 3 in our.
Oh no, I was just gonna say, yeah, I think it is called CAG.
Okay, good. So we came in our top 3, so in our league, so we got bumped up a league, which now stinks because now all the enemies are harder. But a fun little game. It's free. If you want to join our Allegiance in Castle Siege, please feel free to. I checked out my brother's character, and he must be on an allegiance with a bunch of people at work, all these engineers, because they're all like level 10 and 15s or whatever. They're like way beyond us. But a fun little game. So, Prime, I'll kick it over to you. Tell me about your Castle Siege experience.
Yeah, I'm having pretty much the same, I guess, frustrations and enjoyment. You know, I was kind of looking for a good RTS, and I guess this is a good one, but, you know, like you said, you kind of have to wait for, you know, to do things a lot of times, so it's a little bit frustrating. And I had the same problem with the castle where I was, you know, I think I went to pretty much the same thing you did, and yeah, I didn't go for like 2 days. I was like, okay, I just got to wait for this to build up, so it's a little frustrating, but all in all, it's fun, and, you know, still kind of searching for that kind of great RTS that you can play on the phone without having to, you know, wait every few minutes or, you know, days or hours or whatnot to get into. But hopefully, this is scratching the itch, though, at least for now.
Cool. Why don't you just tell us what else you played this week?
All right. So besides that, and besides the usual stuff I've been playing, I actually picked up a couple games recently within the last few weeks. Actually, it's been quite a while since I've been on. I've been trying to play DC Universe Online on the Xbox One. When it first came out a few weeks ago, I got on, I think, like 2 or 3 times, and pretty much right away. But ever since then, if you don't pay any money to get, like, the premium bundle or queue, or the I forgot what the other one is called, Ultimate or something like that. Or not the Ultimate, it's like an annual or monthly payment that you can do. You're pretty much stuck in a free queue, which I've seen be like 10, 15 minutes to like almost 2.5 hours to wait. So it's been kind of frustrating. I haven't got on since those first few times, so I'm kind of just sitting there at a, I think like a level 5 or 6 maybe. Played it quite a lot those first few days, but like I said, unfortunately, I can't get back in. And I can understand, they want, obviously, this came out free, so you can download it free and play it free. And obviously, there's microtransactions, but I think it's kind of a bummer that you definitely have to pay some money just to get in, to be able to get into that premium queue at the very least, to wait just a few minutes so you can get into the actual game. So I've just been kind of going back and forth if I want to pay anything or not. I think like the lowest you can do is like $5, which isn't terrible, but still, it kind of stinks that you kind of have to do that to get into it. So hopefully I'll be able to get in. And I know in the on the KAG site, a couple of the guys, I think Solar Racer X and I forgot the other person right now, but they were able to get in. I guess this past weekend the queue was pretty small during the weekend. I think they got in early in the morning, so they were able to get in. I think it kind of does depend too when you're trying to jump in. I think the few times I've tried lately, it's been probably past 10 o'clock Central Time. So, but it's still the wait line was, or the queue was, it's just crazy. So it's kind of nuts. Gray, did you have a question?
Yeah, I noticed there was a lot of conversations over at Casual Adult Gamers about it. Solo, I think DB was in there talking about it, and Downriver was in there as well. And I was surprised there was so much interest in it. I mean, it looks like a cool game. But so my question to you is, this is not a game you can buy for like 50 or $60 and just own and play anytime you want. This is an MMO subscription model. Where you're paying $5 a month or $15 a month, what's the to not have a wait time, to be able to just jump on and get in a game? I mean, every multiplayer game may have a minute or two wait time, but to get it down to that level, are we talking $5 a month or more?
So the subscription, I forgot what it is monthly. I think it comes out to like $15 maybe a month, somewhere around there, like between 10 and 15. And then I think, like I said, the lowest you can pay is like $5, which is just, I think there's different, like, I don't know what they call it, but like almost not really cosmetic things, I guess, that you can buy. And if you buy those things, you'll automatically be put into a premium queue, which is like the lowest queue, or not the lowest queue, the next queue above free. And then there's the subscription queue, which I think is called like the member queue or something like that. So they have like little, like I said, $5, $10, $15 things you can buy that will jump you up into that premium queue. So otherwise, you do have to pay the monthly, or you might even be able to pay for a whole year. I'm not sure. I didn't look into it that much.
You know, it just seems like that model of paying $15 a month is it's kind of passed. You know, I mean, people were doing that for World of Warcraft and some others, but I haven't heard anybody really jumping on that bandwagon, especially on a console. So, I mean, the last one we had wasn't Elder Scrolls Online, and then they ended up going free to play after a while. So it's very interesting. It'll be interesting to see if it works for them.
Yeah, that was, I think, actually before I got onto the Xbox One, Elder Scrolls Online was the monthly charge, and then like right before they had dropped it and on the PC, and then when it came out for Xbox One, it was just, I think you still had to buy it, like to buy the actual game, but then you could just, you didn't have to pay anything to play it, or to get further into it. Obviously, there's still microtransactions in it, but yeah, so it's kind of weird. And I've seen on other forums too where people compare it to there's a Warframe, and there's another one that came out not too long ago, Neverwinter, I think it was. That, and I've played a little bit of both of those, and there's like no kind of queue whatsoever in those ones. You just jump right in, and they just have microtransactions, to buy whatever the in-game currency is, and just cosmetic stuff, and they seem to be thriving just doing that way. So I don't know why these guys decided to do it like this. I mean, I'm assuming it was just kind of the model that they had. I think when it first came out, the DC Universe, it was, think it was always free to play, I think. I'm not quite sure on that. Because I know it came out on the PC and the PlayStation 3, I believe, the first time when it originally came out. So I don't know. That's what they decided to do. So hopefully the cubes get better, but we'll see.
Yeah, it reminds me of the World of Tanks model, where it's a fun game, you can get in and play with your friends, but if you're going to be serious at it, you're going to have to start spending some money, spending some gold and buying some stuff. But the base game is free, to get so you can get your feet wet and figure out if it's for you or not. So interesting. What else you been playing?
So the last one I got, actually, I just picked up Lego Dimensions for the Xbox One. So I've been playing through that. I picked up obviously just like the starter kit, which comes with Batman, Wild Style from the Lego Movie, and Gandalf from Lord of the Rings. And then I picked up a couple of the I think they're called Fun Packs, where it's just like a figure in a vehicle, Superman, and what's his name, Emmett from the Lego Movie for my son. So I've been playing that. Played probably about a half hour, 45 minutes, just by myself when I first got it. Just kind of get the feel of it, and then but then the last couple weeks I've been playing with my son, so we've been having a pretty good time with that. There's a bunch of different worlds you kind of go into. There's like a main hub area, and then there's portals to the different worlds, like Lord of the Rings and the DC Universe and stuff like that. Scooby-Doo, Ghostbusters. There's a bunch of different worlds. So there's a main storyline that kind of runs through it, just separate from those worlds, and then you can just go into those worlds and just kind of mess around, do missions and stuff like that. So it's pretty cool. I like it. The worlds are pretty large too. I was kind of surprised. Actually, I was hoping DB would be on so we can kind of. I think he had picked that up too. I was just want to get his thoughts on it. But yeah, I'll have to ask him about that the next time he's on. And yeah, I've been having a lot of fun with that.
Is it only two player?
You know what? I'm not sure. It's only just I only have the two controllers anyway, so I don't know if it's more than just the two players or not. It's kind of interesting because I have, so it's the three guys that come with it plus the two extra guys I bought. So I'm able to put all five guys on there, and they're all on the screen when you're playing. Plus, I think there's three vehicles, but I can only put two on there to because there wasn't any more room. So there's a lot of stuff, a lot of people and vehicles and stuff on the screen all at once. So it's kind of surprising if it's not more than two, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure for sure.
Yeah, I'm just asking because I'm thinking I would love to have something besides Minecraft to play with the grandkids. And if we could do three players on one Xbox, that'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out and let you know. But yeah, it's like I said, the hub worlds or the world itself, they're pretty large, so you can definitely kind of run around and do your own thing. I know it splits the screen. I think it's actually horizontally, which is kind of nice, I believe. So I don't know, like once you get that, a third or fourth person in, it might be a little bit hard to see unless you have like a really large TV.
Yeah, true. I remember going back to the days of Halo on the original Xbox and putting four people on a 30-inch TV, but we still had fun. How about you, Zeus? What you been playing?
Must be having technical difficulties again.
No, sorry. I swapped hotkeys and I'm confusing myself. So, the original Halo split the screens horizontally when you were playing local co-op too, didn't it?
Yes, but you could do four player per box, so you get the four corners. But yeah, it was horizontal. I like the horizontal for the first person better. I think it was Time Splitters that did it. That split it vertically down the middle of the screen, and that was difficult, very difficult to play.
Cool. Cool.
Go ahead, Zeus. You can,
So,
if you want to tell us what you're playing.
yeah, what you been playing, man?
Sorry. Interestingly enough, I've been playing a lot of Halo 5 Guardians, multiplayer, actually. For the first time in my life and in the franchise, I am over the last 2 weeks, at least, I've regularly played Halo multiplayer, just with the physics that, the way they used to be, where they used to be so heavy and kind of tankish, like in comparison to other first-person shooters, I've just never enjoyed Halo multiplayer. And then on top of that, the thing that has always bugged me is the ridiculous number of different modes that there are in multiplayer for that game, and having to learn like the rules for each one, has historically just driven me nuts. But this time around, just set of circumstances. There's a group of guys I've been playing with regularly on Friday nights, sometimes on Saturday, and a couple of them who have been around Halo a long time, and we're just playing in kind of small groups, and you know, nobody's too concerned about, you know, how well we do in any one given match, so we're actually spending some time like going through some of the different modes and talking out what the rules are and getting through the gameplay. So it's actually been pretty decent, and I haven't spent any multiplayer time in Halo, so I'm just getting through my initial, you know, giddiness over leveling up, you know, my Guardian and you know, getting extra wrecks. Although it's kind of wonky how you get some of those and they don't really mean anything except in certain game modes. Then other than that, I really haven't been playing a lot for the sake of gaming. What I've actually been doing is I've had two pieces of hardware under review. The Corsair Saber RGB 10,000 DPI gaming mouse, and the Plantronics Rig Flex 3.5mm dual mic headset, which is actually the headset that I'm on for this podcast. So I've been testing both of those for reviews pretty thoroughly. I'm done with the Saber. I still have to do the write-up for the Rig Flex. But most of what I've been playing has I've just been playing in an effort to test those two pieces of hardware. So I played a little bit of Metro Last Light on the PC, and used that for test, just because it was the only first-person shooter. I really wanted to get some first-person shooter time in with the Corsair Saber to kind of put it through its paces pretty rigorously. So I played some Metro Last Light. It is kind of a very slow plotting first-person shooter. It's a little lighter than Metro 2033. And when I brought up Last Light, for some reason I was thinking I was bringing up Metro 23, so I was really confused about how everything looked the same, but the story was different. I was like, this isn't where I left off with this game. So, but still had a pretty neat time just checking out the first couple of encounters in that game. I do actually like how it plays and how the story is a little different than Metro 2033, which is very heavy and has tons of cutscenes all over the place. Metro Last Light seems to move at a slightly better clip. And then probably the most interesting thing that I played while testing was Unreal Tournament 3 Black, which I've had forever, but just have never played that much time in. So I started working through, I guess what's theoretically, well, I shouldn't say it's a single-player campaign. They have a single-player campaign, that's how they actually refer to it in the menu, which I thought was weird. I played Instant Action, which is kind of a little bit, I guess that's like, it's like the old, well, it's not quite like the old single player, so I guess maybe Unreal has had that around for a while, but it allows you to go in and you know, select a bunch of maps, put them on a playlist, and select different AI as bots, and put them in rotation, and then set things like the AI skill level and some other things, and just kind of play the game as a single player. The one thing I didn't like about Unreal Tournament 3 Black is they removed the option to auto-level the AI difficulty. So in previous iterations of UT, they had a setting, I can't remember exactly what it was called, but basically where the difficulty would scale and shift and adapt based on how you were playing. So as you played the game in single-player mode, it would get progressively more difficult and then would theoretically kind of balance out, but it would always balance out right at the edge of your skill level. So, but in Unreal Tournament 3 Black, I didn't see that option there at all. So you could only select the AI difficulty level, and then it was set at that for the duration of a round. So, I played at levels in between Experienced and then Adept. And Adept is like three levels higher than Experienced. I can't remember what the levels are in between, but I just kept playing matches and kind of varying that difficulty level and found the game pretty enjoyable there, so Yeah, so that's what I've been playing. Do we want to talk community news, Gray?
Yeah, and that's some interesting stuff. Tell me about the headset, the dual mic headset. What's the deal with that?
Yeah, so it's a little so I'm gonna go off on a 2 minute kind of not a rant, but just a description. So I have reviewed quite a number of headsets since the Xbox One and PS4 generation, since Generation 8 started. And it's a weird landscape. Mainly that, and what's pertinent to your question is the term dual mic. So, frequently when you, particularly if you buy these things online, when you go and look at these things online and then you get the box, frequently the descriptions are different, sometimes significantly. And a big thing is that, for whatever reason, despite the fact that they've been out going on 3 years now, headset manufacturers are still very sketchy about putting the terms compatible with Xbox One and compatible with PlayStation 4 on their boxes. I don't know why, but I think it stems back, going back to when the Xbox One was first coming out and they had that that audio adapter, which I still use on my controllers, and maybe manufacturers not quite being clear on what that thing did. So this is an instance where, at least where I ordered it online on Newegg, it is listed on Newegg as being Xbox One and PS4 compatible. The box doesn't say one word about the Xbox One or PlayStation 4, and the box describes it as being compatible with PC, smartphones, and tablets. So where the dual mic comes in is you get two different microphones and cable sets. So you get two different cables, each with a 3.5 millimeter stereo plug at either end. One of them has a boom microphone on it, and that's the one I'm using now. It plugs into a port on the back side of the left ear cup, and then extends a boom microphone around down the side of your face. And then the other end goes into your 3.5 millimeter unified stereo and microphone jack on your PC. Now, if your PC has discrete inputs and outputs for stereo, sound, and microphone, it also comes with a splitter, so you can split the single 3.5 millimeter jack out into two discretes. And then the other microphone and cable set that it comes with is an inline mic like you would have for a smartphone set of earphones with an inline mic. And that, I haven't been able to figure out why they put that in the box or why they felt a gamer would need it. The only thing I can think of is if they see somebody as being a hardcore gamer who plays mobile games, and you're going to be sitting at home on your phone, or maybe even on a tablet, and you would want to take a call that you received while playing the game, and it would cut you over immediately to the inline mic. I tested both the boom microphone and the inline mic, and the boom microphone definitely sounds better. And I tested those by game capturing games and then reviewing kind of the audio capture thereafter, and making some test calls to like my Skype account and then recording them using Audacity and then sitting and listening to the difference in the audio quality afterwards. So the boom mic definitely sounds better. Again, I was kind of struggling to figure out why they felt the need to put the inline mic in there, other than expecting somebody might be playing a game and then the game getting interrupted by a phone call. But they're awesome. I think pretty highly of them. The ear cups are super comfortable. Wearing them for a 2-3 hour gaming session is absolutely not an issue. These might be the only headset that I currently own that I could say that about. Audio quality seems to be pretty sharp when you're using the boom mic. Everybody I've played with on Xbox Live has said that my audio sounds crisper than when I've used other headsets. And in capturing some, I captured some audio playing Half-Life 2, and once I had it set up and configured correctly on a PC, it sounded honestly better than some of my USB microphones that I have and more supposedly higher quality recording equipment. So I'm pretty happy with it as a review unit so far.
Cool. Well, I'm going to jump into the first break, community news, and then I'm going to turn it over to you guys. I'm going to have to step away from the mic as we go into the gaming news. So, but let me do the community news first here. First, I want to talk about CasualAdultRacers.com and Forza 6 Top 5 of the Week. Now, I don't know if you guys watched this week's excellent video. They put a video together. Seems like every Monday night it comes out, recapping some of the funniest or best, moments from their Forza 6 race night on Sunday nights. And I got to say, No Brakes, number 4, definitely something I've done many, many, many times. It's always good to see several of the guys come around those corners and not quite make it. But I had to say the hedge in the number one spot, the number one of the top five was just had me laughing out loud. I needed a good laugh, and that was really funny. And hats off to Solo Racer X, who puts that together every week and chooses different music every week and some different captions to go with it. And if you'd like to know more or join the guys for some racing fun, check out casualadultracers.com. And now we'll move on to casualadultgamers.com. And unfortunately, Zero has not posted this yet. But I can confirm that the member of the week, as Sunday, because we moved the member week to Sunday, again, because Zero wasn't doing it on Saturday. So, but anyways, on Sunday, the member of the week was Wonderboy. I think it was his first time being member of the week. So congratulations to Wonderboy. Now, by the time you hear this, it'll be Sunday again. So there'll be a new member of the week. So you can find out who that is by going to casualadultgamers.com. And again, hats off to our member of the month last month. It was Solo Racer X. So far and away the winner of the month for posting the most interesting articles and videos up at the site. So congratulations, Solo, on being the member of the month. And no really news for Band of Gamers. Last episode, we talked about moving the release date to Sunday. And guys, I don't think anything else has changed for us since then. I don't have anything in the mailbox from the communities out there on the web. I know that a new season has started over at CAGNFL.com. If you're into simulation football and like playing football on your console, you can always check those guys out. And I forget what season they're in. They're like they've had dozens and dozens of seasons. I can't even keep track. But many of the members over there have 7, 8, 9 championships to their name. So, and they have a lot of fun doing it. So you can check that out as well. And for that, I think that's this week's community news. And now let's move into segment 2 with the news of the week. And who wants to go first?
I can go.
All right,
here. So a couple news articles right now. First up is actually keeping on the Halo 5 news. Let me pull this up real quick. There's a new update that came out. Actually, I think it came out last week. It's the Memories of Reach and DLC, and it dropped some new rec, basically armor for the different characters from Halo Reach. I'm trying to remember some of their names. I think Kat, June or Jun, the name exactly, and Jorge, I think, was another one. I think there's like one or two more. So you get rec items, basically their armor, along with a new arena map and a new mode. It's the zombie-themed infection game mode, which I don't remember if I ever played that on Halo or not. I remember that was a big one, actually, speaking of another game that we talked about earlier, Time Splitters, that had that infection zombie mode. But I can't remember if I ever played it on Halo. I know I've played it on Call of Duty 2, or also, I should say, not Call of Duty 2. I think it was on the original Black Ops, maybe. But basically, if you don't know what that is, one person starts out as the infected zombie person. Everybody else is basically running from him, and then if that person touches somebody, they become a zombie, and just kind of so on until everybody's the zombie, I believe, is how it goes. At least that's how it was on the other games. So that's come out. And they also, I guess they teased another... I guess they're calling the final, potentially the final piece of DLC, and all these all the DLC that's come out has been free for Halo 5, and that is the Hog Wild update. And I guess they really haven't said anything too much about that. I guess there was a live stream last week where they're kind of previewing the Memories of Reach, and then they kind of, I guess, kind of tease this. So maybe some more vehicles or something, or updated vehicles, kind of, you know, like the Warthog or something like that. But we'll see about that. Any comments on that?
Any news about Firefight?
You know what? That's a good question. I think it doesn't
I think
say
that was
that
due out
Firefight.
This summer.
Yeah, that, maybe that might come out with this next update. Because I think there was still beta on it actually, which I haven't jumped on Halo 5 for a while, so I'm not sure if anybody can get in that or if it's just like certain people can get in that beta. But yeah, no, that was definitely wasn't in this one. So it was just that infection game mode. So probably, like I said, probably not Hogwild. Maybe that update will come out, or maybe it just might be its own update. Who knows? And then my final article here, my second article. Unfortunately, some bad news here. Disney has canceled the Disney Infinity game and line of toys, which is kind of surprising. I figured out of the, I guess, kind of what, three or four, I guess what they call games to life, games and toys. I thought this one was probably doing, you know, the better of the three or four. They canceled the game, and they're canceling obviously all the line of toys. I think they have two more that are coming out, two more sets, based on Finding Dory and I can't remember what the other one was now. Oh, Alice Through the Looking Glass, which is both movies coming out this summer. So unfortunately, they canceled this, and I'm sure now the toys are probably going to be pretty much hard to find once they're all sold out. So that kind of stinks, but it's kind of sad about this because this is one of the games I first started playing with my son. We have a good time on it. We're still playing it now. Actually, we played it over the weekend too. That was another game that I didn't mention on my games that I've played recently, but it's a fun game, you know. We kind of just, you know, kind of screw around going through the world and stuff, you know, jumping on vehicles and do some missions here and there. He's more just kind of messing around, but still, it's fun, and, you know, obviously I can still play it. You know, it's not dependent on a server or anything, but it's just kind of sad that they're not going to make any more. And, you know, they added the Marvel in last year's edition and then Star Wars in this year, so, you know, I thought it was going good, but evidently, you know, I don't know if it was just the sales or it was just getting too expensive, obviously with all the toys that they have to manufacture and all that, but, you know, they do have Marvel and Star Wars money coming through, so you figured they'd be able to keep this going. But and then unfortunately another effect of this was they closed down the studio Avalanche once they canceled all this. So that you know, that kind of stinks too, that they couldn't you know, find something else for them to do, or, you know. But I guess with another part of their strategy with this is they're gonna start going to third parties for, I guess, their games. So we'll see how that works out, I guess. So any comments on that?
Sad.
I hear there are a bunch of rocks that need to be painted over at the Square Enix studio. Yeah, because Square Enix is notorious for taking, like, 10 years to get a Final Fantasy game out because they have, like, dozens of artists and programmers literally painting the same rock over and over again.
Oh, yeah. Well, at least they're kept in business, but yeah, like I said, unfortunately, they closed down this studio, so. So we'll see. Maybe it'll pop up maybe someday, either through them or something else. They can outsource it or whatever, but unfortunately, yep, they're gone.
Yeah, was that a third-party studio, or was that a first-party studio?
No, yeah, that was a first-party. That was an internal studio that they, Avalanche, which made the game, so.
Okay. Well, I guess just freed up a bunch of developers to work on NX games, huh?
Yeah, they can always go, you know, work on Amiibos or, you know, Skylander stuff or Legos. So, well, you know, I guess there's plenty of places to go, fortunately, I should say. So hopefully, though, you know, everybody will land on their feet, and I'm sure they will. And I'm not sure, I'm assuming that was out of California. They didn't say in the article where they were based out of, but more than likely they're probably on the West Coast somewhere. So that's it for me. Zeus, you want to jump on your news stories?
Yeah, sure. So the first one is that the specific time and date for Sony's E3 press conference has been revealed by virtue of them having sent out their press conference invites to the media today. Of course, the dates for E3 are, I guess they're the 14th through the 17th. But of course, you know, the big press conferences actually go down the day before the event is actually going to start. So, or at least a few hours before the event officially starts. So, Sony's E3 press conference is going to be 6 p.m. Pacific time on Monday, June 13th. So that's going to be 9 p.m. East Coast time. And they're expected to be talking about at least PlayStation VR. And people are questioning whether or not they're going to talk PlayStation 4.5. I don't think there can be any question that they're going to talk PS 4.5. I think they almost have to. I don't think there's any way in the world they could do this press conference and not address it. So, and then Microsoft's press conference, I think, is going to be earlier that day.
Yeah, 9:30 a.m.
So, and then Nintendo, I guess, isn't doing anything specifically. And then this is the year where numbers of the large publishers have pulled out of E3. They're going to be elsewhere in the city doing their own thing. So, and that's going to be Electronic Arts and Activision. And then, of course, as you just mentioned, there will be software companies who are not demoing anything, such as Disney. So that is about it. It's always nice to see the very solid kind of statements on when things are going to actually go down before these events start. That kind of gives you the official flag wave to start your own personal hype engine for anything that's going to go on at E3, or at least start being very detailed and meticulous about keeping up with the news for that event.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they're going to bring besides the PlayStation VR. And I know they have at least a couple of games. No Man's Sky is supposed to come out, I think, a week or two after E3? Maybe even, I don't think it's coming out the same week, but a few weeks afterwards. And then they have
sometime that month.
That Robot Dinosaur game, Horizons. I know they had, that looks actually pretty cool, so. But other than that, I mean, I don't think we've really heard of anything else that's going to be coming. I guess they have that one game, Dreams. I think it's called Dreams, so it's kind of like a make-your-own-game kind of a thing. I don't know. I know they showed it last year. I don't know if they really showed anything else lately.
Right, I mean, I'm guessing that the big things are going to be, Activision stating which console is their lead console for the Call of Duty drop this year. I say stating it, but it's really who's, whose keynote they show up for to directly support. And then on PlayStation, I mean, they just dropped Uncharted 4. I don't know what else they've got coming as far as exclusive titles this year. I'm hoping that they say, and again, this is a thing that I think that they can't avoid, is I think they've got a demo show and maybe say something about this Gran Turismo. I forget what it is, but it's not Gran Turismo 6, it's yet again, just like they did with the PC, PS3, something kind of in between. I should say Gran Turismo 7, right? It's something in between 6 and 7, where it's going to be not a full game, but it'll be a game. This one's specifically going to be entirely multiplayer. So, I think this is an E3 where they will have to say something about that and show it. I wouldn't anticipate that they would have hands-on gameplay, but definitely kind of, demonstrated gameplay with a specific person on stage kind of showing the game through, like, a scripted sequence.
Yeah, I was going to say Gran Turismo VR, but I guess, I think Drive Club has, they're supposed to do a VR, aren't they? I think, maybe. I thought I heard or read somewhere.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I haven't seen specifically that Drive Club was going to do it. That game definitely needs something to save it, but maybe VR will be the thing.
I was also thinking maybe Destiny, because I think they're supposed to have something out this year, right? I thought they said last year that they weren't going to have anything this year, but then I think they kind of reversed on that and said they were, maybe, just like DLC or something. So, since they were the, the headliner for that, you know, headline console Sony when they originally released. I'm assuming they'll probably have maybe a big presence too this year.
Yeah, I hope that's the case. I would definitely be excited to see that. So my second and last news story for this segment is that Razer is opening its first U.S. retail store. So this, I would be pretty stoked about this. But, you know, the big thing about a retail store for Razer is you will now have the ability to kind of walk into the store and demo some of their products. So especially for their higher-end and highly expensive gaming peripherals. You know, most of the time I see those, I just can't rationalize in my head why they would be worth the cost. And so I haven't had any Razer gear in the past year. You know, the other thing that, and I don't know if they'll address it, but, you know, in the gaming peripheral world, there are just tons of really great peripherals that stand out and are very distinctive and have some neat functionality that come in, like, way less expensive than Razer products. So it'll be interesting to see what strategy they take with this retail store. Which is going to be located at Westfield San Francisco Center. So I don't know, Cyrus, I know you mainly game on consoles. Are there any Razer peripherals that are available for consoles that you've checked out?
No, there's nothing that I've checked out. I think they have, like, they've made controllers, though, I believe, for the Xbox One, and I'm assuming PlayStation, I believe. They don't quote me on that totally, but I thought I've seen stuff on their Instagram, but yeah, that's kind of interesting that they're opening, going to open a store here in the U.S. I don't know. Do you think they're, and obviously this is the one store that they have so far, but do you think they're a big enough brand to kind of be out there on their own like that? Or I mean, I don't know. I'm reading the article here, and they have like a two-story or a two-level store, and you know, obviously that's taking up a lot of space, and they'll have everything, you know, demo units of all their stuff. But I know a PC, obviously they're pretty big deal, but do you think they have what it takes to kind of to succeed in this space and to expand maybe eventually?
I'm not sure if I could say that for certain or not. I think it is and it will be an awesome store because you know they're probably just as conscious about design and everything as Apple is, and so I would really love to go to the store and see it because I think it's going to be pretty amazing from a design aspect. It is interesting, you know, that they're trying this out. It speaks highly of kind of how companies are looking at backing gamers as a community, and about the theoretically and about the demand for things like gaming peripherals. So. You know, I think gaming peripherals, as far as being things that that differentiate you as an individual and as a gamer, I think the trend for that is strong enough that they will be fine financially. I just don't know. You know, I just don't know if the consumer base for a whole store is going to be there. Now, what I will say is, I expect the type of consumer to. There is something neat about being able to go in and just physically get these products out of the store. And so maybe again, they'll present people with that option, right? If the store is here and it's a 5-minute, you know, walk or drive away, why would I not just go do that instead of ordering it online? I don't know.
No, yeah, I have to agree. Stuff like that, I always like to go in and see it for myself and hold it and, you know, see what it looks like and all that. So it should be cool. But yeah, it should be interesting. They have gaming laptops too, I guess. I was going to say they have other electronics. I don't know, did they have like a tablet or anything? I know they have the, I don't know if it actually ever came out, but there was like a fitness band, basically, I believe. I forgot what it was supposed to be called or what it's called. I don't know if that ever released or not.
I think it did. They bought Ouya, so, and Razer had its own streaming box. So one of the things that I reckon that they'll definitely do is, you know, when they do their streaming box again, that they'll have, you know, that they'll have demonstrable units of it, you know, in the store. I'm trying to think. They do have a new gaming laptop. I can't remember what it's called, but basically it's this super slim laptop, close to MacBook Air, MacBook territory, but Not quite, but the big thing is it runs with an external GPU enclosure. So you so they have a box that you can buy that you can put your own graphics card in. So it has a graphics card on board, but it allows you to expand on that and get really big power from a desktop GPU and connect that in to the Razer. So yeah, that thing in and of itself, you know, getting to demonstrate and play with that laptop and its breakout box might be worth the price of admission just by itself.
So you said they did have a streaming box, or they're going to do one now that they have Ouya?
So they had released one of their own, which wasn't received very favorably, but then they bought Ouya, and so I expect that they'll be doing a second iteration of their own streaming box and combining it with some of the Ouya tech and approach.
Okay, so was it just gaming streams, or was it like entertainment too, or both, or what kind of like streaming? I guess if it was games.
Yeah, it was kind of it was like a Roku. So it was basically Roku functionality with some game stuff, you know, bolted onto it. Just like that Fire TV gaming version that they have. Amazon has a controller for. Now streaming yourself that's a different device, and that device is now out. Now it's like a breakout box that you can use for streaming, and they have an app that goes along with it. But I haven't had a chance to check that out yet at all.
Oh, okay, I just wanted to clarify that.
You know, I used to really love going to CompUSA and checking out all the cool stuff, and you know, it was all you know, computer focused. You know, it was all computers. You know, so you had a lot of the huge gaming section full of games and peripherals and, I mean, everything under the sun. And, you know, then they went belly up. And recently our Best Buy here locally, you know, closed their doors. So, you know, it's just something about these high-tech stores have a hard time, I think, in some areas staying open because the cost of that... You know, it costs a heck of a lot more to have retail space than it does to have a warehouse in the middle of nowhere. And, you know, it's a shame because I used to love doing that. But, I mean, even today, you look at books, you go into Barnes & Noble, the price online is so much cheaper than the retail price at the store. You know, and it really is a shame. But I guess that's the world we live in. Hey, guys, I'm looking at the time. Why don't we jump into the NX discussion, because this has been, you know, kind of buzzing around for the last couple of weeks in Prime. Why don't you lead us off here and tell us what is the current state of the Nintendo NX?
All right. Yeah, so like you mentioned, so there's been a bunch of news lately, mostly surrounding E3 and what they're going to show or lack of. So they had a press release basically a few weeks ago. First, let me just go through the phone stuff. They actually mentioned a couple of new phone games that they're games for phone, excuse me, for iOS and Android that they're going to be releasing: Fire Emblem and Animal Crossing. And this, all these stories are kind of like all jumbled together, so I just want to kind of break them out. So these two games are actually going to be what they call pure gaming experiences. It's not going to be like the Miitomo that's out currently, where that's more just like a social thing. It's not really a game at all, really. You're just kind of answering questions and kind of playing dress up, basically, with your me that they've, you know, brought over to the phone now. So, but these are supposed to be, they didn't go into detail of, you know, as far as what they're going to be, you know, detailing what each game is going to be. But Fire Emblems, you know, I think it's like a turn-based strategy, I believe, if I'm correct, if anybody wants to correct me on that. And then obviously Animal Crossing is kind of the, I guess you want to say like life simulator, but you know, you have these cute little animal creatures that you control and can do stuff with. So they didn't detail on what the games are going to be, but they did say there are actually going to be games. So hopefully, and I believe they're going to be free to play. So I'm sure there's going to be all kinds of the good old microtransactions in these games. But then onto the other gaming news, as far as E3, so they're not going to have a presence basically as far as like a conference or their Nintendo Directs that they've done in the past. What they've announced so far is they're just going to have Zelda at the show, and this is Zelda just for the Wii U, and they actually announced that it's coming out for the NX next year. Actually, both versions are going to be coming out next year. They delayed the Wii U version until next year. So for right now, all we know is that they're going to have Zelda at the show, and that's about it. They didn't mention anything about like 3DS games or anything like that, or any of the other mobile games if they're going to show those off. So it's just, I don't know, it's just kind of weird that they're not going to show off the NX at all at the show. I actually thought, and I think I mentioned this on the Keck site, that I thought maybe they would kind of announce the NX and maybe, whatever the proper name is going to be. I'm assuming it's not going to be NX, like kind of almost before the E3 show, and then kind of, go into E3 showing off all the games and the system a little bit more. But they're not going to show anything at all on this console. And they did say it's supposed to come out in March of 2017, so I don't know when they actually might. Obviously, there's other, gaming shows. Later in the year, there's the Tokyo Game Show, and I was actually just listening to a podcast. I think it was GameScoop from IGN, and they were mentioning a show I think that they actually put on themselves. I think it's called Space World or something like that. I don't know. What do you guys kind of think of them not really having much of a presence at E3?
Part of me wonders if it's due to the fact that Microsoft and Sony may be making some big announcements, and Nintendo wanting some space for themselves. They don't want to get lost in all the hype. But I'm kind of curious because we've all been back and forth on this, and if they don't come out with a box that's the same specs of our Xbox One and a half and a PS4.5, then what do they do different to get their market share? Like the Wii, we know the Wii, it had its motion controls and it just sold like hotcakes because it was different and unique. And the Wii U had its tablet, but it really didn't catch on. People have tablets already. People have, monster phones, phablets, tablets. A lot of people have three or four different types of tablets, And that's why I've said in the past, I think it's great that they're getting into mobile games because a lot of their audience is on. There's a lot of the younger generation on tablets and phones now too. So, I think that's a great move for them. But what do they do in the console space if they can't play with the big boys, So I don't know. I'm kind of looking at this as they want their own space, and they're saying, you know what? Let's let Sony and Microsoft kind of dominate E3 and fight for oxygen, and we'll get our own space. Like the Nintendo Directs, we'll have our very own space. So I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I was kind of thinking maybe they're just kind of doing like everybody else's and, just kind of breaking away from E3, just wanting to do their own thing. Yeah, I don't know if it's just, they're trying to go with the trend of that, or like you said, they just want their space to, announce everything. I don't know, when do you guys think that they might get something though? Anytime like right after E3, or, they'll just wait later on in the summer, or I don't know, what do you guys think?
Well, and you mean get anything by actually showing a prototype unit of the hardware?
Yes.
I think they're going to do that via either a Nintendo Direct or in like their own, their own venue, rather than do it as part of another trade show. I mean, and really the only places for them to do it are what I mean, has GDC is actually coming past, hasn't it? So
Yep.
really, their only options are the remaining PAX shows. Oh, and TGS.
Yeah, I know the last few years they didn't have like a super huge presence at TGS, but I don't know, maybe this year they'll kind of just throw everything in there and, we'll see what happens. Although I think that's, what is that, usually the August or September, I think, TGS? Maybe even a little bit later. I'm not sure exactly.
For some reason, I was thinking it was late summer, like August, but I could just be completely wrong.
I'm kind of thinking, why do any type of marketing blitz for a product that's going to be out after the holidays? If you're releasing that product in March, you're not releasing it for a holiday 2016, obviously. So why spend any time in that overcrowded market? You know, launch with a solid stable of games in March, you know, and you know, stop promoting it in January, February, you know, and you'll have the whole space to yourself pretty much, and then you can build on your titles and really hit it hard for holiday 2017. So no, I'm sure there'll be a lot of buzz, but I think they're going to try to wait until all the buzz is all done with PlayStation and Xbox. I think they'll want that furor, you know, all that talk and that. I don't think they want to be mixed in that because I don't think they want to compare with those two, you know, because they're a unique company and they have their own brands, you know. So I bet it will be after the PS4 and Xbox One hype comes down some.
Do you think they'll continue with the Nintendo Directs? I know, obviously, that was, I think, basically an Iwata thing that he started that and doing that. And they've had a couple, I think, maybe two or three, since his passing, with the new or acting president CEO of the company. But do you think that they'll just kind of continue that? Obviously, it seemed to go pretty well, go over pretty well, even during Earth E3, even though they're not going to do it this year. But I don't know, do you think they'll continue the E3, or I'm sorry, the Nintendo Directs, or do something like just a big conference or something?
I could see them continuing with the Nintendo Directs. I think they've been fairly successful, and it's achieved undoubtedly, you know, one of the things they wanted to do, which was get rid of the expense of going and doing one of these super large events. That kind of really, you know, kill people as far as the hours they have to put in to get ready, just to the physical end of what actually gets put on display, but then also. The AV setup and the IT guys and the development staff, you know, getting a demo ready for a show like that, so that it's playable, and so that they catch any bugs that might still be in, you know, whatever chapters of content they peel off to be in a demo.
Yeah, and then the last bit of rumor news, I guess, that's been going around. Actually, this came out a couple weeks ago. Was that the potential of whatever the annex is, that it might be it'll go back to cartridges for their media instead of, you know, DVDs or Blu-rays or whatever. And this was because of some statements from the cartridge manufacturer, basically, that does the 3DS cartridge. And I guess they did their cartridges back, you know, for GameCube and 64 and all that. Machronix, I believe is how you say it. So they had their financial, what do you want to call it, report recently, and let's see, what is he? It doesn't say if he's like a president or a CEO or whatever, but they're talking with somebody from the company, and they're saying how that they expect ROM chips to increase in the latter half of the year, and then going into, you know, 2017, and also coupled with a report from Screen Critics that company's been testing a chip capacity of 32 gigabytes, which is obviously still smaller than Blu-rays. Blu-rays can go up to what, like 50 gigs or so, is what they're saying here. So I don't know. What do you think of them going back to cartridges? Better load times, I guess.
I guess my concern is just, it just seems like an old technology to be. I mean, the whole thing is just very muddled. I mean, the messaging on the product from all directions. Cartridges, let's say there's some new whiz-bang cartridge that includes, you know, higher technology. Let's say that we're not talking about the same chunk of technology that we all, you know, would put in our Game Boys. Or Nintendo consoles, it still just seems to elicit the imagery of a lower tech console. So I think, you know, if it were me and I were playing it, I would, and you know, the cost of manufacturing optical discs or whatever seemed daunting, I would go with a console that was all digital. You know, they keep saying how this is a forward-looking console and it's, you know, it was going to be tech on par with the PS4 and Xbox One, but you know, you know, like I said, I would make choices that would make my console stand out and seem kind of future-proofed, rather than making it look, you know, radically, I don't know if cartoony is the right word that I want to use, but, you know, so radically different from other, from other consoles that are on the market. It just seems like a weird choice to make.
All right, so let's look. What does a DVD give you? 50 gig? I mean, a Blu-ray, 50 gig?
Yeah,
Blu-ray's 50.
All right, so flash drive. What can you get? What do you can get? You probably get a 30 gig flash drive if you bought in quantity. $10? I mean, you can easily pick up an 8 gig USB flash drive under $10. So 20 or 30 gig flash drive. $10 if you buy it in quantity. Maybe that's what they're thinking. I don't know. I mean, it has to be something modern, like an SD card inside of a cartridge, maybe.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of, maybe, because obviously the rumors with this system have been that it's going to be, you know, a console / portable, and you know that might make sense just because if you're going to take these things around, you don't want to be lugging around a full, you know, Blu-ray or DVD with you, you know, for, you know, just compactness, you know, so you can just pop a cartridge or, like you said, an SD drive or SD card or something, and, you know, into you know, one of those smaller carrying cases. But that's about the only reason I can think of they might be, you know, thinking of even going back to, you know, a cartridge or, you know, some kind of card-based system. So.
Yeah, if the games cost $60 and $10 is for a piece of hardware, I know stamping a DVD's, Blu-ray's not that expensive, probably $2, a buck. You know, when you do them in quantity, but I don't know. It just seems like a lot of extra expense for, I don't know. Yeah, if you don't have to install everything, then you don't need this massive internal hard drive, right? So if it's like a solid state drive, not a cartridge of from days past, but more like a solid state drive, a mini solid state drive, then you eliminate the need for a hard drive, and it's going to be faster than a hard drive, right? So that could be interesting.
Yeah, if it's more like a solid state, though, I would think that would be more expensive instead of cost savings, though, I would think. I mean, I don't know what solid states are coming down in price, but they're still fairly expensive. So I don't know. Unless it's some new technology they created.
You can easily get 125 gig, right? And that's way more than a game would ever need. But you can get that for $40, right? You can get the 42, 43. I bought a couple for the house. So if somebody was willing to make a 20 gig or 25 gig, right, yeah, you can get that down into the $10 range, right? And that the speeds, if you don't have to put a terabyte, like right now, if you're an Xbox, you need a terabyte or half a terabyte hard drive because every game has to be installed off the disk. Well, if now your game comes on a high-speed disk and you're just plugging it in via a USB 3.0 or 4.0 or, you know, what FireWire, whatever the latest technology is, SATA, whatever, you know, then you don't need. All you need is a tiny little extra space to save your profile or your downloads, right? So you don't need terabytes now because you're really not installing all these things into your console. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what they do.
Yep, only time will tell, though, I guess.
Yeah, I still think stamping discs is so much cheaper. Any final thoughts on this, Zeus?
No. Not anything that I can think of to add.
How about you, Prime? Any final thoughts? You want to close it out?
No, nothing. I just want to mention, I did Twitch out a... I did do a Twitch session, I think, last week. Some Call of Duty gameplay that I was doing. But unfortunately... the sound came out like really bad, so I didn't get to post that. I wanted to, but because it's been a long time since I did any kind of Twitch streaming or anything, but I thought maybe it was just the export from Twitch to YouTube. But then when I went back to Twitch, it was still just like all almost like staticky and garbled like after the first few minutes. So unfortunately, that kind of got lost into the ether there, if you will. So hopefully I'll be able to Twitch something maybe this weekend and try to get it out there.
Excellent. Well, let us know. Make sure you post the link so we know. We can go check it out. Well, you know, guys, I'm looking at the time. I think we're going to wrap it here. On behalf of Zeus Adamus, Osiris Prime, and myself, Greylock 3491, I really want to thank you for listening to tonight's show. Thanks for coming back after we were gone for 2 weeks. And as always, if you want to say something, you want us to give you a shout out on the show, or if you have some community news you want us to announce, please send us an email over at podcast@bandagamers.net. And until the next time, peace.